Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Douglas Grunther. He's the author of The Quantum and the Dream. And Douglas, you said something earlier about one of the shifts in consciousness. We're changing from the written word to the screen. And I'm thinking, going back to Plato, which you also quote in the book. And anyway, Plato had a warning when humanity was going from the oral tradition of telling stories to one another to something written down, to the symbols that related to language, but they were written down. And he had a warning. Do you remember his warning?
Sure. And I have to credit Marshall McLuhan, the great visionary media philosopher and the most sought after speaker during the 1960s, for pointing this out. First thing I would say is, look, we still love to read. Books are not going away. We owe a great debt to the written word, the printing press, and the expanse of literacy. But what McLuhan wanted to point out is that, and he was a literary scholar, so he loved books, but he understood that in the 60s, if you want to understand the revolutionary 1960s and the women's movement and the civil rights movement and the anti-war movement, you have to understand how TV affects the human brain. He said every new technology causes the brain to rewire, and it takes time for the brain to adjust. Plato's concern, you'd say, how could anybody be against the invention of the alphabet? Plato had a very good reason. He thought the oral tradition was great because people would speak in the rhythms of nature, and he was concerned that instead of listening to each other, we were going to be trying to understand nature by reading these totally artificially made up letters, and we would get divorced from nature. He wasn't wrong. Now, of course, the reason we can talk about Plato as a great philosopher is because we read him. It's ironic, but he wasn't wrong. While we all agree that the written word and the printing press and literacy is a wonderful tool that makes us human, it has limitations that only McLuhan was pointing out. It unconsciously divorces us and separates us from nature, which is one of the reasons the climate is collapsing on us, okay?
It wasn't only McLuhan, because later there's the work of Joseph Chilton Pierce, and then also Jerry Mander. Also, these two people really delved into what does the digital screen do for us. And you point out, too, that it was that, like, TV is a corporate medium. What we watch is decided on by certain individuals and corporations, and it's a one-way street. We are passively watching it. We're not interacting. So this is the difference now with the World Wide Web, with how we interact on the internet. But my question then is really about if we have this knowledge at our fingertips, and I use it all the time, and I look up different things, how to pronounce something, or what is the history of the artist Christos. But does it increase our wisdom? Having all this information and being able to talk to all these people across the world and have interactions with them, where do we find the wisdom? What advice do you have there, Douglas?
That's why my third shift is the shift from the age of information to the age of recognition.
Yes.
Because of computer intelligence, AI, which is brilliant, scary, and we're not quite sure where it's taking us. We also see it as a threat and a competitor, but that's the left hemisphere of the brain that sees anything it can't understand as a threat. However, I'm saying we have enough information. Thanks to AI, we have more information than we than we know what to do with. The reason we became the smartest, most powerful creature on the planet, not because we run faster than other animals, not because we're stronger, but because of our ability to collaborate with one another. And that recognition of the importance of collaboration is why I am confident that kicking and screaming, we will be able to figure out how to use this amazing technology that allows us to not only communicate with each other around the world, but we have to figure out how to do it more collaboratively and less competitively.
Okay. Now, this takes us back to the beginning of our conversation, because you point out in the work of both Lynn Margulis and Elizabeth Satoris that they take us back to the evolutionary cycle of bacteria. Again, going to the small to inform us of how we can go forward. And so can you share with us what they discovered about collaboration?
And this was the key. This is the recognition that I was intuiting we need. I didn't quite know what the age of recognition was going to be. I just knew that we needed to. And when I finally was able to understand what Lynn Margulis was doing, and then Elizabeth Sartoris picked up the baton from her, it finally clicked in. So I'll give you the punchline. What Lynn Margulis proved, and she was a woman getting her PhD in biology in the 60s when it was a real man's world. She said, I love men, but I'm not going to take crap from any of them. And B, her, not only was she in a field where she didn't have a lot of women's support, but she, her theory was controversial. She didn't care. She was convinced she was right, and she proved she was right. And here's what she proved. She proved that ancient microbes with no brains figured out photosynthesis, the most important technology ever invented here on the planet Earth. The ability to take sunlight and certain chemicals and turn them into food. Okay? I thought this was discovered by plants. She proved it was discovered by these ancient microbes. But here's the important point about this. They discovered it because they, underneath the surface of a competition and zero-sum game, in order for one to win, another has to lose. And yes, if you watch bacteria, they're eating each other. They're fighting for territory on the surface. Lynn Margulis got under the surface, and that's the key of my book. We have to get under the surface of things, okay? She proved that under the surface of microbes eating each other and battling each other and fighting for territory, they learned how to collaborate together. And so what she, and then she became a co-author of the Gaia Theory with James Lovelock, which says that if we want to understand what it means to be on this planet, we can't divide things up into geography and geology and chemistry. It's one interrelated system, the same way at the quantum level, everything is connected in a web of interaction. And then the human unconscious can be so wise because it's connected. It's not separate. And so Lynn Margulis proved that microbes through collaboration, now they weren't doing it through their individual brains, they were doing it because of the pull of evolution. And evolution is nature's intelligence. So I'm proposing that to get to a new renaissance, we have to shift to the right hemisphere of the brain, which understands we are not apart from nature. We're not here to take from nature all the physical comforts we can. It's destroying the planet. We're here. We're part of nature. And nature's intelligence is greater than us. It was nature's intelligence that showed that through more complex, novel forms of collaboration, that's how we move forward. That's why we're here as Homo sapiens. And we're being called upon here in the 21st century to find new, more complex ways to collaborate, the same way microbes did, the same way plants did, the same way mammals did before we showed up. We're here, supposedly Homo sapiens, the wise person. That's what it means. And I'm convinced that kicking and screaming, we will plug into nature's intelligence, because the World Wide Web, for all of its problems, and it has addictive problems, we have people coming at us with commercials for stuff we don't need. We get it.
And fake news. Yeah.
Fake news. But there was always fake news.
Yeah.
The difference is that as much as the top media companies in the world, the Meta, Facebook, and the Twitter, the X's, and the Microsofts, the more they try to control things, you and I have more ability to collaborate with each other in ways they can't stop. They can't stop us from learning more about who we are. They can't stop us from connecting with people in other parts of the world who, without the digital screen, we never could have met. And underneath the surface of what looks like a very chaotic and materialistic web, right? There are people like you and I and your listeners, people like Fruchov Kapra, people like Ian McGilchrist, who are putting out websites and emails and podcasts and blogs. But you have to get under all the noise. And here's my analogy, which I think makes sense. Anybody who has taken the time to sit down and either meditate, contemplate, do a creative visualization like Einstein did, what is the first thing we all have to confront? The chattering monkey mind, right?
Yes.
Right. So when we sit down to slow down and go deeply inside, we hear the chattering part of the mind. Why would we think when we get on a digital screen where 5.5 billion brains are connected that it's going to be polite, calm, and easy to navigate? Our own individual minds aren't that easy to navigate. We have to practice and learn how to meditate, how to contemplate, how to access the right hemisphere of our brain, which I call, Justine, the ultimate playground of visual expansion, okay? That's why I love dream work. Einstein said a dream made his career. My main dream teacher's favorite example of a nightmare changing history for the good is the invention of the sewing machine, which was only happened because of a nightmare. I mean, if we have time, I could give the story.
Well, it's in the book, which is really great. But I just want to reemphasize what you're talking about. And I was just on a Zoom conference yesterday with Mother Jones magazine. They put on a Zoom and 500 people showed up. And one of the things that they emphasized about when people said, well, what can I do? What can I do? And they emphasized, when you see something good, when you see something useful, when you see something that is going to be of benefit for the good, for humankind, share it. And that's what you're talking about, that collaboration, that sharing of information, that we're not powerless. We have connections with others. We have spheres of influence that we can use. So let's go more into some of that in just one moment. I'm speaking with Douglas Grunther. He's the author of The Quantum and the Dream. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Douglas Grunther, and we're talking about the shifts into a new renaissance. And I'm thinking, Douglas, as we're talking, and you mentioned, and we were talking about Salvador Dali earlier, and I'm thinking about how art, going back to the 1500s in the Renaissance in Italy, how art, really the visual arts, painters, it was totally revolutionized the way art was perceived and the way it was created. And so here we are, we're talking about a new Renaissance. So what can you say about the artists today and how they're helpful in helping us see the rise of a new consciousness?
Well, it's interesting because Marshall McLuhan, who's one of the visionaries I champion in my book, because I learned so much from him in the 60s and 70s, and he's really speaking to us now. He made a very provocative statement that it's always the artist who sees the future first. And that's because the artist is more comfortable in the right hemisphere of the brain. So the more we can learn to shift to the right hemisphere, the part of our brain that where our dreams come in, where our intuition comes in, where our sudden flight of fancy comes in, where our daydreaming comes in. These are all things that Einstein championed, Jung championed, Niels Bohr championed. This right hemisphere of the brain is where the artist lives. And so I feel in the 21st century, while it's very useful, and I'll talk about a specific example I discovered for the first time yesterday, to look at where new music is coming from, where new art is coming from, I think that one of the recognitions we need is we're all artists at some level. When we shift to the right hemisphere of our brain, we are going to come up with new ways of seeing things, new ways of understanding things that the left hemisphere never could have accepted. But in order to do it, we have to live. What are the characteristics of the great artist? Dali's a perfect example. They use volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity as assets. But our culture tells us those are things we should avoid. We want certainty. We want comfort. We want rationality. But that's not where the new ideas come from.
Escher and all of his drawings just like would boggle the mind, the way he depicted the world, and he would be another example of.
Let me give a contemporary example because I discovered him yesterday through the World Wide Web. Okay, I never heard of this man. He's like a 23-year-old Peruvian named Lenin Tamayo, and he comes from a long Incan ancestry, and he's become a worldwide pop star because of the World Wide Web.
Tell his name.
The first name is Lenin, L-E-N-I-N. The last name, Tamayo, T as in Tom, A, M as in Mary, A-Y-O. Now,
okay.
He created this integration of his kind of ancient Incan ritualistic rhythm with Korean pop music, because he could get that over the web. And he ended up becoming a TikTok star. Now, I'm not on TikTok, but that's where a lot of young people get their information. And he now has millions of followers. Now, did he have to wait for a well-entrenched record producer to find him and get a contract? We all know musicians get screwed by contracts all the time. No, he put videos on TikTok over the World Wide Web. He has millions of followers. And what does his music emerge out of? A love of his ancestry and yet a need to collaborate currently. So there we have the perfect integration.
And there's something he must be doing, and I'll look him up. There's something he also is speaking, and this is one of your phrases, to the geography of the heart.
I would say he's tapping into the collective unconscious.
Ah.
And so this is not something he figured out logically. He was following his passion. Okay. I'm not saying you're going to necessarily like his music. I don't intend to listen to a lot of his music. Isn't my kind of music, but it's powerful.
Yes.
And his story is powerful. And the fact that he's got millions of young kids listening to him, and while he's a great dancer and a great singer, he's championing his ancestry, which had a severe reverence for the planet.
Exactly. Douglas, I want to go back a little bit to something that you said earlier. And we were talking about AI and being afraid of AI and all of that. And there was something very interesting that you gave a research experiment. And it was where different people, a whole group of different people, would predict who was going to win a certain horse race. And different people, who would be first to come in, who got second, and who got third, picking all three of them. And no one person did it, but AI did something very interesting. Can you tell us the result of that experiment?
When I first read about it, I said, this can't be true. It's a company called Unanimous AI. And what they did, I'll try to explain it briefly, because it took me a while to understand it. They created an algorithm which allowed the following. They got a group of people together, and the rule was they could not be professionally involved in horse racing, but they had to be very interested in horse racing. They all were participating from their computers anywhere in the country, and the company created this algorithm where it was looked like a little hockey puck, and the people on the screen had the name of all the Kentucky Derby horses. And when the bell went off, they were told to with their mouse, move the puck towards the name of the horse they thought would win the race, okay? Meanwhile, the computer algorithm took in all the movement of the, let's say there were about 20 people, all of the movements it took where they were going. But the people were instructed that if people disagreed, if people were going to a different horse's name than you were, you're going to feel resistance. The computer would create resistance. Don't try to force your way to your first choice. If you feel resistance, go to your second choice. If you still feel resistance, go to your third choice. Okay? And at the end of it, the computer figured out, took all this information in and predicted the Kentucky Derby winners, the first, second, third, and fourth. And so
They made a bet.
They put down $11 and they won $1,000 back. Okay. So the point here is that this was an integration of human intelligence and computer intelligence, okay, working together, collaborating. We're back to the recognition that the reason we're here on this planet is because of our ability to collaborate, not to compete. And too many of us look at AI as a competitor. It's an intelligence that we created. And our task is to learn how to collaborate with it. And that's when I go back to the left and right hemisphere of the brain. I think most people would agree that the skill of a computers are much better than we humans at accessing information, collecting it, and analyzing it. It can do it better and faster than us by far. Before AI showed up on the planet and we invented it, that was our job. To gather information and analyze it, right?
Well, it was our job, and we'd go to a library and we'd use the Dewey Decimal System and we'd look up whatever we were looking up, and then we'd have to go to another book and find the next reference and this and that and the other. But the internet and AI technology computes that in a split second. And so gives us lots of references and to follow up and say, okay, what's your next question? And here's a suggested question. Do you want to follow up on this one? And it's just amazing. But it's not creative. It's not creating that combination of Aztec music with Korean music. It's not doing all of that. And
that's our job. And so proposing is that AI, computer intelligence, is much more closely aligned to the left hemisphere thinking of our brain, which is what made us the most intelligent species on the planet. Now, in the 21st century, the computers are better at that form of left brain thinking than we are. So our job is to shift to the right hemisphere where the computers can't go. Because in addition to being creative and visionary, we are sentient creatures. That means we feel. We have emotions. Right. Yeah. And those emotions get us in a lot of trouble. But it's those very emotions that give us love, empathy, and care. And wow. So yes. Computers can imitate that, but they can't feel right. That.
Thank you so much, Douglas. We're going to have to go out on that. That's a wonderful place to go out. I want to thank you for being with us. I've been speaking with Douglas Grunther. He's the author of The Quantum and the Dream, Visionary Consciousness, AI, and the New Renaissance. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, douglasgrunther.com, and he spells his last name G-R-U-N-T-H-E-R, douglasgrunther.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3830.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org, or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists. Margaret Wheatley is the author of Perseverance, a Life-Saving Skill for This Time. Next time on New
Cooperatives and Mutuals Canada is honored to host the annual CMC Congress from June 10 to June 12 at the Hotel Saskatchewan in Regina, Saskatchewan. Under this year's theme, The Future is Co-op, join us for thought-provoking plenaries and participate in interactive workshops and breakout sessions. To learn more or register, please visit www.canada.coop now.
You're listening to